Chilli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chilli.
August 25, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me run my mouth. Anyway, Thursday, second to last broadcast day of the week here for the O'Chilli Effect. And I am extremely glad to have Mike Swanson with me in the first hour. He's the guy behind WallStreetWindow.com, the author of The War State, and also Why the Vietnam War, the first in a series of three about that particular conflict. Anyway, second hour, I guess I'll take your calls this week. We may very soon have Larry Hancock back in that slot, but not pushing him to get there any quicker than he can. And we'll talk to Larry in the coming weeks. And a few other interesting individuals might be booked for the Thursday second hour very soon. But till we get there, let's get through this one. Mike, you know, before we get into things going on elsewhere in the world, be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. What's changing over there, sir?
Well, nothing you can see just by going to the website yet. But I've sent you and JP Satilli a couple emails about local news and the news industry over the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I know I've written to y'all a couple times is that I thought that the email list is everything, and that the websites, and you have one, I have one, he's got one. Mm-hmm. I know many people got one, but I was suggesting that the websites really aren't that valuable, and it's all in the email list, or I guess in your case, it would be the people that are subscribing to your show through RSS feeds, different podcatchers, and so forth. But over the past couple of months, I've actually kind of rethought that. I've been reading articles. Well, two things happened in a way they're related. But one, I was out of town a couple months ago, and I was in Baltimore, actually.
Okay.
And I'm a baseball fan, a Baltimore Orioles baseball fan. And for a long time, maybe, you know, 20 years, I don't know, at least 10, 15. I haven't done it in the past couple of years, but for a 10-year period, I was going on a website that was a message board. Mm-hmm. Just devoted to the Baltimore Orioles.
Right.
You know, it wasn't owned by the baseball team. It's just an individual owned it. And I hadn't gone on it in a long time, and I went on it. And again, this is something I used to go on every single morning or day. And now, actually, I find myself, I'm going on one. It's using the same software, but it's about playing poker, you know. But I still watch the Orioles. I just stopped going on that board when they started losing really bad a couple years ago. But anyway, yeah. The guy that owns it put up a message saying that he wanted to sell it. He just, you know, wanted to get out of it. And through using different tools, I could see how much traffic it gets. I could estimate, he has Google ads on there.
Right.
I could estimate, just guess, you know, take a good guess how much revenue it's probably making. And I considered buying it. I didn't do it, but I considered what would the price be. And I was thinking three times what would be the 12-month earnings of that thing.
Right.
But, you know, it's not an extra, it's not a, you know, insane amount of money, you know.
Okay.
But I thought about it, and I thought, no, I don't want to do that, because that's a whole other thing you got to, you know, maintain and do. And then I thought, well, you know, if I was going to do that, spend all that time into it, I could do the same thing on my website. it put a message board up or, you know, and try to make money off ad revenue. In fact, I did that, for a period of time. I had a message board on my website and I was making money from the ads. And right. What happened though is if you run something like that and you don't, really moderate it, which I wasn't doing, it'll, in time, they can easily get out of control, because what'll happen is some person, either a couple people will start fighting with each other, or one person will just try to like dominate everyone else by arguing with them, and it'll just break down. And this, of course, everyone experiences this sees it on Facebook all the time.
Right, right.
But that's what happened, and I took it down. But anyway, just that made me realize, well, you know, there was value in these websites. And then, maybe it was last month, I was reading some, I don't remember what college it was, but they set up a program studying, the local news industry, and what's working, what isn't, and studying website traffic and so forth. And is really interesting. It basically said that the most valuable visitors or people are people that return to a website every single day.
Right.
And that you have to have something on the site, you know, that makes them want to do that. And then it was saying that when it comes to news, that the most valuable thing is a strong editorial writer that attracts these repeat visitors. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to tell you, I tried having the forums on my website briefly, and I didn't like it because indeed somebody did come in and try and dominate the thing, and it does seem as though there might be a monetary value to it if you can continuously encourage that steady traffic, like you were saying. And how do you do that? Well, you have people that want to engage and check about what their engagement did, right? That's how you do it. And it does take a bit of moderation and it does take a lot of work. And I just, you know, I saw that certain people were going to just, you know, overrun the thing. And, you know, it didn't seem to me to be profitable the way it was going. And yeah, I had to use stuff like Google Ads and this and that, which, you know, pay you next to nothing to run their ads. But, you know, next to nothing, if you add it up enough times, it becomes something. So that was the strategy. And I just said to myself, no, I'd rather focus on getting the podcatchers, you know, all picking up from the website. And that, now the funny thing is I lost the ability to have people directly download, the show from the website. And it didn't really change the listenership much. I had like three complaints. Where did it go? The download button. And I didn't even do it intentionally. It just went away and I didn't know about it.
Yeah. I noticed it's gone. Okay. Is there a way one can download it somewhere else?
Well, yeah, you can go get it off of the Spreaker feed or okay. Apple or whatever podcatcher you're using. A lot of people subscribe there. And that's the thing. I don't even have a high level of subscribers in one platform. They're all over. So I just send it out to all of them and you collect those numbers together and you can see it's a decent amount that way. But the people that were coming directly to the website were going down, down, down. They were rather wanting to go subscribe somewhere else on a platform where they collected other podcasts, other media, you know? Now, I'm not saying that would work for the news because, again, you and I have discussed these apps that seem to deliver it, right? You get your news update. What is that one that was really, really popular?
Newsbreak
that was picking up stuff from you. You know, and every once in a while they pick up something from somebody else I know and the same thing happens. You use that stuff to direct traffic to the website. And that's the only way that works. Now, I'm not going with the Google ads. I'm making, you know, arrangements with people and trying to have, you know, just listeners sponsor things. Okay. Yeah, not the best business model, but it's, you know, it's working out a lot better. I got a clearer conscience than the nonsense that was coming up through Google ads. You know, at one point I had all kinds of weird stuff. I mean, even, escort services wound up popping up on some people's, views on my website. Now I had zero control over it, but it was just, you know, like, how come you're trying to sell the, it was, literally like, Eastern European brides or something that was coming up. And I don't know, you know, if Google has done something about that since or whatever, but I don't want that crap on my site. You know, it's not based on what I feed through, by the way. It's based on your browsing history. So, you know, if you're getting weird ads off of one of these sites that has Google, it's probably something you did that is causing it to show up. So don't blame the website. I mean, everything I go to now shows me guitars because I was looking at guitars for a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? It happens that way. But so, some of these people were getting Eastern European brides. And I'm going, look, I didn't do that. You know, but they're like, it's on your website, you know. So it's a weird thing when you plug these things in and, you know, they're automated and you don't know what you're going to get. So I don't know. I don't like it. Other people though have told me that, you know, the filters have gotten better and you can get around that now, et cetera. But I don't know, man. It's weird. Now, I would have liked to have seen what happened if you had bought the Baltimore Orioles chat board, though. That would have been interesting. You know, I'm sure, again, it wasn't an outrageous amount of money. But
well, I don't know. Yeah. I knew what the price I was going to offer was. I don't know if they would take it. You know.
But either way, you had guaranteed engagement because an established brand where I guarantee there's still even, you know, the terrestrial media is not doing so well as far as the radio goes. But I promise you in the Baltimore area, there's a sports radio station where people 24 hours a day want to talk about the Orioles and so on and so forth. So you have a resident audience for it. And, you know, there are Orioles fans everywhere. I mean, it's a Major League Baseball team. So, you know, those people can come together all in one place and boom, that's it. I mean, even some of these Facebook, well, probably you're already on it, but I'm sure there's like an Orioles fan page.
Well, there is. And those people are crazy.
Well, I'm not saying everybody's sane who's in the game. I'm just saying it's there somewhere.
What I'm seeing with the Orioles, though, in the media over the about them, right, is I think is what is gonna is what the direction local news, or perhaps is going into.
Okay.
So, what I said they're crazy. What has happened is there is this actually this message board forum. It's called Orioles Hangout, and they have a Facebook group called Orioles Hangout.
Right.
And the Orioles have been terrible. That it's different people on Facebook than it is on their message board.
Okay.
And the team has been, you know, last place team for the past 4 years, 4 or 5 years. And now this year they're winning and they're expected to be losing 100 games and they're like 8 games over 500.
Nice.
Possibly. They have a chance to get in the playoffs.
Nice.
So they're doing really well and beyond expectations. And what's going on is on Facebook, every single time if they lose a game, they bash the team, they bash the players. Well, the manager should have took this guy out. They should have done this. And you know, oh, he should have left this guy in. This team's it's really some of the stuff they're saying is just so crazy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, they didn't care when they're losing. And now that they're winning, you know, a player's strike, they were complaining. Now, I watch a lot of these games
myself.
And there's a guy that walked last night. Then he came up to bat the next time and he swung at the first pitch.
Right.
And missed it, and they were complaining about that. The point is, people go crazy on Facebook.
Yeah.
Crazy. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just, it's like they just argue for the sake of arguing.
Well, use your radio app sometime, Mike. You know, when you're wanting to check out stuff that's going on, there isn't a game on. Use your radio app and find the sports station in Baltimore, because I promise you there is one. Okay, and take a listen to it for a little while. All right, because it'll be the same thing except in audio form. You know, where people called, the guy should have done this. Doesn't the manager know any better? And what about that pitching coach? And all sorts of stuff like that will go on those radio. I used to listen to WFAN in New York. And indeed, when I was there, you know, I was watching Mets games and calling up and sometimes doing that in the middle of the night. You know, when I would call up, Steve Summers. He called himself Captain Midnight. Anyways, the guy was on in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. I'd call him up and talk about, like, back in the day. You know the Bobby Bonilla contract? I was one of those Mets fans that was angry about that from day one. Right? I mean, they're still paying him, by the way. An outrageous amount of money. They're still paying Bobby Bonilla. You know, he's been retired for, what, 20 years? I mean, the guy, you can't blame him for taking the money, but I mean, it's hilarious. I'm like, why did the Mets pay this guy? You know, they paid him what they should have given to Barry Bonds, and they should have gotten Barry, because both of those guys became available at the same time. Remember, they were both Pittsburgh Pirates, I think, right? So They both went free agents same time. The Mets overpaid for Bobby Bonilla. Of course they did. And every time they pay for a superstar, the guy goes bust, you know? It's like, hey, we got this great home run hitter. Yeah, as soon as he gets to the Mets, it's over. You know, his career's over. His knee goes something. You know what I'm saying? Outside of Mike Piazza, I think he's the only superstar in the past 20 years that they got from another team that didn't go bust on him. Or 30 years, maybe. Maybe it's 30 years now. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is that if you listen to the sports radio, you'll hear it. And these same guys will do the same thing on Facebook, because Facebook is the home of reactionaryism. Whether it's about the Mets, the Orioles, or, you know, Joe Biden, it doesn't matter. Boom, it's out there. This message board, though, should be a different animal. And like you said, it's got different people on it. Or at least it looks like it does. You never know with nicknames on those chat boards, right? So.
Well, what has happened is in Baltimore, they had the Baltimore Sun was a major national newspaper.
Right.
I mean, not like the New York Times or something, but, you know, it was a major, large newspaper.
Right.
You know, bureaus all over the world. And they got bought out by one of these conglomerates, and they've downsized over the years, and they laid off many of their sports writers.
Right.
And so when I used to go on this Orioles message board, you know, there was the Baltimore Sun and then this message board, and that was about it on the internet that was about this about the Baltimore Orioles. And what has happened is on Facebook, I've noticed, the baseball team itself, they've got their own website and they do their own broadcast. So they have their own media operation devoted to it. And on Facebook, I noticed there's a radio station or a radio show about Baltimore sports. They'll cover football too, or whatever. But because it's baseball season, half of it's about this. And they do a daily broadcast, and the video is put on Facebook.
Okay.
And so sometimes I'll watch it, and they've got a free magazine that they distribute in the Baltimore area with advertisers, and they have sponsors of their radio show. So that's how they're making money. But what I've found is there's like three or four other websites. Well, there's someone else, back up. There's two or three people running their own podcast. Right. Maybe they have some Patreon people, but maybe they're just doing it for free. For fun. And then there's three or four other websites written it seems like they're all written by ex-reporters.
Right, right.
Are running them. Sports reporters that are retired or lost their jobs or whatever. So this whole, what I'm saying is there's like all these different websites now out there about this one topic. Uh-huh. And I think this is sort of what's going to go and happen with the news industry. Well, in a lot of ways it already is, where you just have, like in Virginia, yeah, in Roanoke, there's a reporter that's been laid off, and he started his own news website asking for donations. Right. And then there's another one. He was an editor for this newspaper. Now he's created he's got a foundation and hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations. He's hired reporters, right, a couple reporters. And then there, you know, where I live, there's still a county paper that's good, but the city paper is part of this Lee Enterprises chain. And when I look at some of the other cities, I don't know how these papers are going to survive, because they're barely reporting anything. And they own the news. This chain owns the newspaper in Greensboro, a city of near me, 500,000 people in it, North Carolina. And I read something saying they only have 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
You know, I think in the next 10 years, most of these newspapers are going to be gone. Yeah. You know, they're just, and then I read the thing about you got to have, they're all trying to move people onto their websites, but their websites suck. You know, there's nothing, you know, they're all putting the same in, you know, the conglomerate owns 50 local news websites and 90% of the content is the same.
Well, that same thing has happened.
So it's what is this?
Well, the same thing has happened in entertainment, right? Where you have, you know, intellectual properties out there that are easily monetized one way or another, but what you end up with is the independent sites coming in that are like fan sites and stuff like that doing a better job, okay, than the officials. I'll give you a dumb example. The Simpsons, right? Fox has a website for them, and you have like thesimpsons.com or whatever, and it sucks, okay? That show is the longest running thing in history in television, and their official website is garbage. It's, you know, they go there once in a while for maybe new content or, oh, we're going to release, you know, outtakes, stuff that we, you know, edited away from the show or whatever. People go there for that. But there are literally people running fan sites, fan podcasts that are doing better. I mean, I subscribe to one of them on Patreon, which only costs me like $1 a month or whatever. But me and a whole bunch of other people are doing it. And it's called Talking Simpsons. And all they do is have a conversation about the latest Simpsons episodes.
Yeah, I see a lot of that talking, you know? Better Call Saul, because I was watching that. I see that these kind of shows appear on YouTube a lot.
Right. No, YouTube is home for a ton of it. But some of these people are doing it on YouTube, on Patreon, on everything. And they're doing the same kind of thing I am, you know, as far as trying to distribute, except it's all about just talking about the latest Simpsons episode. And then when the Simpsons is not in production, putting out new stuff, what do? They go back and they, you know, review. Well, let's review season 2. You know, like, they just do it and they keep going. And a lot of them are doing a better job covering the topic and getting inside scoops and literally even getting the creators and the artists involved and stuff like that to come on for interviews more often than the official sites. Because the people are there. They're engaging with other people who have a mutual interest. And I don't know what to make of it when it comes to, you know, like I say, sports and entertainment, same thing. But when it comes to news, it's a little different, I think. Like, I'm not sure how to really articulate that, but seems to be a little different with the news. But there's got to be a way to make the independent fan site work like it does for these other intellectual properties. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure what your question is.
What I'm saying is that the individual fan sites, the individual fan creations of podcasts, reviews, and all that are doing better than the things that are connected to the actual license. You know, we're the official podcast of the Orioles. Probably nobody listens to that. You know, but
it's just propaganda.
Yeah, but then you got like, you know, Joe and Dave's Orioles review or whatever. I don't know. I'm picking out of thin air here.
Yeah.
But those guys probably do better than, you know, the official podcast of the Orioles. We're going to tell you what's going on. And indeed, they might listen to the bench reports or something like that on there, but they're not getting the traffic. They're not getting the listenership that the independents are, that these people are creating for themselves.
Well, they did something strange. I mean, this is, I guess, the direction of the way things are going. They used to have a TV. This is one of the odd things this Orioles network did, is they used to have a television show that came on at 5 o'clock every day of the year. Where it was an hour long show where they would just talk about baseball. And,
well, the Mets used to have what they called a hot stove report during the off season, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was watching this show fairly regularly because, quite honestly, 5 o'clock, watching this, it's an escape from the financial news and the political news, which is all bad.
Of course.
You know, so it's escapism. You know, here to interact, you know, to listen to stuff. But, and I was watching this show for several years on a fairly regular basis. And then in 2020, the team stopped airing it because of COVID. They stopped airing in the studio. Uh-huh. And then they fired all the people that were on the show. And these were people that had been there for 30 years.
Right.
Some of them were players. You know, previously, they just got rid of all of them.
Right.
And then they moved their operations, their media operation, to all YouTube.
Yeah.
And they hired these young guys to do it. I mean, they're in their 20s. And I'm going to YouTube, and these videos, you know, they're doing a couple videos a day, but they're getting 200 views, 500 views. It's not a lot of people watching this. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, for, as you're saying, I bet you, there's more people listening to these radio programs, I'm sure.
Yep.
But it's interesting, you know, that they shifted their whole, you know, they're still televised the games, but they don't do their talk shows on television.
Well, because there's there's direct advertisers for the games. And they could no longer sell the advertising on the shows. You know, there was always the big post-game shows and all this stuff. And like you said, even during the off-season, well, let's just have a show about what's going on. Or is there trading happening? What about the guy who was injured this season? Blah, blah, blah. But the advertisers went away. So, obviously, it doesn't fit with the business model, but... You know, a guy who can get some engagement and is doing it for next to nothing. See, that's the other thing. You don't need a whole production studio to go onto YouTube and just, here we go, we're the official channel of the Orioles, right?
Yeah.
So now you don't need a production staff. You just need to have, you know, some green paint to paint a wall and some basic video equipment. Done. You know, and then, like you said, they fired all those guys that they had given jobs to. Which were, you know, legacies. They had, you know, listen, you're in the organization. We don't have a coaching job for you, but we can give you another job. Why don't you do the post-game shows or, you know, do the off-season reports or whatever? And they would give these guys work. But, you know, again, after a while, look, it's not bringing in the cash it was. And it's probably that it didn't fail. It just probably wasn't as profitable, you know, for the effort.
Or cheaper. Cheaper.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
Yeah, both.
It became cheaper. You know, they probably lost some money because, you know, Budweiser doesn't necessarily sponsor the YouTube channel. But they make enough probably to justify whatever it is they're putting into it now. As opposed to before, they were like, we're only making this much, you know. And these major league franchises, they're large operations, as you well know. So, you know, they don't necessarily care what the quality of the hot dog is as long as the sales don't go down. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm talking about hot dogs at a stadium. But I'm just saying that that's just the way it is. So it makes sense, but I have this weird feeling that looking at that, like I said, it makes sense to look at the entertainment industry and how they're adapting and taking over what was independent space, right? But the news industry is a different, I think is a different, metric here. And, it's still difficult to navigate, to figure out exactly what the best solution is. Look, Mike, I'm going to take a break here. And, when we come back, we might continue this conversation. Or who knows, maybe we'll switch gears. Mike Swanson is with me, WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know, go there. It's about more than Wall Street. The Ocelli Effect will continue after this.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect here on a Thursday begins now at Ocelli.com. Of course, you could be hearing this some other time, some other place, and most likely you are getting it through there because most people do. Okay. And we were talking about distribution of podcasts and intellectual properties and other media, et cetera, with Mike Swanson, WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. And, yeah, it's about a whole lot more than just Wall Street. And I'm going to ask Mike about some of the emails and stuff he sends out in a minute. Also, he's the author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War. Both of those books you can see advertised on the website and you can hear during the break. So, yeah, definitely recommends highly and all that. Mike, you know, before we get back into the subject we were discussing, I do have a question for you, though, because you were talking about the value of the email list. And I do know that there are people still out there willing to buy those outright. Cause I got a request recently about, you know, maybe we could discuss buying your email list. Just for anybody who does subscribe or anything like that, I do not have a full email database or anything. And I'm not going to sell your information, just so you know. That's not something I'm going to do. But it does have monetary value, apparently, if you amass a large enough list. And it's weird because a lot of people tell me, you know, listen, old man, you got to get away from this email thing. Nobody wants to use email. I mean, we all have to use it to sign up for stuff and whatever. But other than that, it's not like I'm going through my email newsletters. Meanwhile, I know that people read yours, Mike, because, you know, people refer all the time to you and to JP's rundown to me when they're talking to me about stuff. And they'll tell me, ah, I found this on the rundown. I got this in Mike's email. You put these things out, all week. What is that doing for you? And that's almost like a digital newspaper. I mean, are you getting a lot of responses out of that? Do you note that there's a lot of people engaging with that? And is there a way to have them engage with the emails directly if it is successful for you? I don't know. Is there?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, let me put you this way. I've listened to, something on YouTube. I mean, when it comes, this will answer your question, but okay. In an ironic way, with the internet, emails, it's an online thing. These forms of internet communications, put it that way. Okay. I got on bulletin boards before there was the internet through dial up.
Right.
And I got so into it when I was like 15 years old or something that I made my own bulletin board. They couldn't dial in 24 hours, but you know, certain at night or something, had it so they could.
So, so back in the days of the US net, whatever,
yeah, that US. Yeah. In fact, I had a JFK assassination. What did they call it? Did they call it US net?
Well, there was the USNet slash whatever, and these chat boards were interesting. I used to get on them back then, too. I was one of the early people on those, and they were funny. They had a whole bunch of weird stuff. That's when they released the, they called it Web TV, remember? and it plugged into the phone line, and then you could plug it to your TV, and boom, you had internet access. I mean, it was slower. It was slower than a death march. It's like I'd put a picture up in the JFK chat group, right, and then wait like 6 hours, and maybe somebody could see the picture. You know, like you had to download and wait, and it would just, you know, take forever. Nowadays, you click on a picture, boom, it's up there. You know what I mean? Speed. But at that time, I mean, you literally took 6-8 hours to upload a picture, and then maybe somebody could see it. And yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, it was. Well, I couldn't do it now, but I wrote a game that one could play on these bulletin boards. And somebody contacted me and said that they set up an online bulletin board today, and they had my game on it. You know, which is, so I went in there and could play it. I mean, it was pretty crazy.
What game was that?
I don't even remember the name of it now.
What did you do in the game?
Well, it was sort of like Risk.
Okay.
There was another game, I think it was called Geopolitics or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I combined that in Risk. So.
Well, somebody came up with on those
chat. That's basically what it was.
Those chat boards later gave birth to a whole bunch of weird things, including the, remember the movie War Games? Yeah, on one of those chat boards, they were developing like a War Games game. And you know you remember the movie, right?
Oh, sure.
All right, so now you're the Matthew Broderick character, and you get to break into the fake Pentagon's computer and all that stuff, and the thing comes up and literally says, "Would you like to play a game?" and all that, right? And a little later, in the later 90s, I think it was, or maybe it was the early 2000s, somebody put on one of those boards the JFK Reloaded game. Remember that thing?
Yeah.
Oh, you never saw JFK Reloaded?
Yeah, I saw it.
And there was supposedly a $10,000 prize to anybody who could replicate Oswald's performance, according to the Warren Commission. Remember that? Because it was like you're in the book depository with a rifle. And you have to try and shoot JFK. I mean, you saw that, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was crazy.
I might have played it.
Right? Well, I tried it. It was crazy. Here's a common thing you and I have with Jim Fetzer. Ready? He played it, too. He said, "Oh, I came up with the best idea. Shoot the driver." I was like, come on, Jim. That's not an original idea. You know? I tried that, too. And I also tried shooting him coming down, Maine? Which works out a lot better, by the way. And, the game would let you do it, but of course you failed because, the $10,000 prize was supposedly if you could replicate Oswald's performance and actually get, you know, the magic bullet to work and everything. Which by the way, you shoot the driver. I mean, they come get you pretty quick. You don't last long. Although it is kind of weird watching the limo crash into the building, and all that. All kinds of weird stuff. And that was a literal first shooter game. Like you have a man liquor Carcano with you and you get to shoot. All right. Anyway, I'm reminiscing. I'm sorry. What was the rest of this game, though?
I'm taking a long time to answer your question. You asked about email. Is it viable? Well, yeah. When this person contacted me about these bulletin boards, you know, a long time ago, it made me reminisce like you're just doing. And I found that there's hundreds of these bulletin boards that are still operating. Yeah, these people just never stopped. And on YouTube, someone made a documentary about them, and I watched some of it, and there was a person, then they had the raw footage of the interviews they made for the documentary, and I watched this interview they did of this guy who ran a magazine.
I'd love to see that just, by the way. Do you have a link for that handy or?
Not offhand.
Maybe you can get one. I can put it with the show notes because I would love to watch it myself, and I think it would be a good reference for the listeners. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll try to find it when we're done the show and send it to you. But the this guy had a magazine. I think it's called Boardroom or something.
Okay.
Bulletin board, something like that. And I think I may have bought an issue or two. You know, they used to sell it in newsstands and computer stores. And the bulletin boards were a fairly big thing back then.
Right.
And this guy was describing his business of running this, of having this magazine, and it took off. And he got to the point where he's running conferences, and this magazine had over 100,000 paying subscribers.
The guy who ran Bulletin Board Magazine, he had 100,000 subscribers?
Over 100,000, yeah.
Wow. Okay. I would have never thought that, because it was a very small group of people. It was always a small group of people I used to see on the U.S. net. You know, like, you'd find a couple people, oh, you're actually into these kind of movies and also research, huh? You know, like, you'd see the same people. It was a very small group, I thought. But, you know, 100,000 subscribers, I don't know. And there was also what they called lurkers.
He makes a comment in there, and he described, I mean, it's real interesting. He describes how his business kind of collapsed. It got too big for him, right, basically. Is what kind of happened, but he, makes this comment that when he started this, people asked him, would people buy it and read it? And he said, well, I don't care about the people who don't. Now, I don't expect everyone in the world to read it, but the people who do will. And that's my answer to your email question. You know, right, people say that sort of thing about podcasts. Oh, I'm not going to listen to podcasts, or I don't like YouTube. In fact, I had a on Facebook a discussion with someone that's a local reporter, and this, or what, he was a local reporter, and now he posts stuff on Facebook, and he says, I don't care about doing anything on YouTube. I don't go on it. Mm-hmm. Or TikTok or these things. All he is doing is Facebook. And that's the thing about email is people are always predicting it's going to go away, but it's right, not. Right. And I could tell you, you know, the open rates I have for my emails, they're not going down. Right. I mean, I see no evidence that email is going away. But the reality about it, though, and why I do them the way I do, because I honestly, I was influenced probably by JP Satilli, partly, but at some point, cause I used to just write emails that, had a, you know, didn't have all these headlines in them. I would just write something.
Right.
And then I got to a point where I didn't really have an opinion every single day about what's going on in the stock market.
Right.
And I looked at all the stock market emails and thought, well, what are the emails I'm opening up every single day? And it wasn't them, you know, cause they're just most emails people get are just spam,
right,
or advertisements. And then they think, well, the email is garbage. But if you stop, you probably are opening up a few emails every single, you know, consistently.
Right.
And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a I thought all the other stock market emails, people subscribe to them, unsubscribe. I wanted to have stuff that people would, not everyone, but those that would consistently open it and not, And part of the thinking too, quite honestly, was when I also, I don't know if I was doing it before I was reading JP's emails or after. I really don't remember now I think about it, because my thinking started before I ever got on your show, which is where I heard him on your show.
Right.
I was concerned about my email list in the markets, like 2015, because the stock market industry is a boom bust thing. A lot of people get into it and then they wipe out. And I think that's going on now in the market. A lot of people that got in 2020, they're wiping out. So if you get all these subscribers and they wipe out and you're trying to, you know, they're gone, you know. So I wanted to stop talking just about the stock market and make it more of a news thing. I wanted to make my whole website a news website. Now, it's not just about the stock market because of that, and also because that's more what I'm interested in.
Well, I'll tell you, I like it better this way. And over time, you sort of evolved, and now your emails, which I do open daily, you know, sometimes I have a couple of them. I haven't backed up, and I open a couple, you know, like say on a Saturday, I'll open Friday and Thursdays or whatever. But the thing is, you have a diverse set of topics in there. We always get money news. We always get stuff that's, you know, if you're looking to watch the market, you can watch it. But you also have health tips in there, and you have, interesting articles that just come up about the general headlines of the day. you know, like, for instance, today I think you had, stuff on would be the news headlines, too. Different style than JP, for sure. You didn't start sending those out until long after you had encountered JP on the show, but I find it more interesting. And by the way, you can go over and subscribe at WallStreetWindow.com. It's easy to do. You know, you the listener, not you, Mike. You have a subscription. Okay, stupid. But point is that there's a lot to it, and I like it. It's very quick. It's very concise. You know. Sometimes JP starts out and he's got a theme, and I'm not necessarily engaged with the theme. And yours is all over the place. But it's really a snapshot of the day. So I like it. I mean, JP's works too on a different level. But that's really if you want to drill down into one thing and see the different opposite sides of this and that. With yours, it's like a very good catch-up. You know, I haven't been tuned into the news today. Let me see what Mike put out. Because most of the time, it's exactly what the headlines are going to say. And or not exactly, but in a different way. And also, you've got a whole bunch of stuff keeping track of not just the stock market, but the financial health of things in general. You have in there a lot of stuff about, you know, I think today you had a story about shrinkflation. Also had, you've had plenty of stories about what's going on in the grocery store. You've had, you know, over time, not today. But, you know, it's always really interesting. So now how do you use this to engage with the audience is a big question. Cause there's plenty of emails, as you said, that, it's just spam. I just dismiss it, you know.
Yeah. The main objective is to maintain the audience and not lose it. So it's accomplished that.
Right.
And then, I link to my own stuff, you know, on my website, my own commentary, you know, so the people, you know, they get that. That's the main way I'm doing that. But at some point, I'm not doing this immediately, but I'll likely put some weekend emails that are a little bit of a different format that'll do what you're asking me to.
Yeah, no, I get it. I see this evolving.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I see this evolving. It's really cool. But so you don't think the email list thing is going anywhere? It's still a thing, and it's still I know it still has monetary value, like I said, because people do offer to buy your lists and. They're not going to offer you money for something they don't think they're going to make money on, right? So it's just a matter of how diverse it is, how large it is.
The other thing I've done, and this is where it's more influential than it would appear, is I have a different list. You're getting there's a different format if you live in a couple different areas and sign up, including where I live, but I'm doing this in Greensboro and maybe a 200-mile, in several big, you know, I'm doing this in a couple places as an experiment.
Right.
But I have local headlines, regional headlines is what it is. And that, what is happening in that case is the county, the city and county I live in, it's about 100,000 people and there's 1,500 people subscribing to this thing. And they're getting, it's really sort of like their own newspaper because it's starting out for all the, you know, the local headlines. I pick one out from every local source, like radio stations, the two newspapers, TV stations. So there's about a dozen or so local regional headlines. Yeah. And then it goes into what you're seeing. So someone talked to me and said, see, I know what's going on in the county, not so much the city where I live.
Okay.
With the politics and stuff. I don't know any of the city council people, right. You know, but someone was telling me that, everyone is reading this and, you know, this thing is covering everything. You're, it's local, but you live here, so it makes it credible, but then you're covering the national stuff too. So it's real credible. So they feel like, I think it's more credible than, you know, than, everyone hates the mainstream media, or they say they do. So a lot of, you know, it does seem like a real alternative, but the people subscribing to it, I mean, it's 1,500 may not sound like a lot of people, but, you know, it's a lot of the politicians are subscribing to it. Right. You know, I can look at the names and recognize a lot of them. Right. On there.
Right. So it's going to wind up being influential on the local level. Now you just got to figure out how to replicate that from region to region, and you'll have a web,
yeah,
so to
basically.
Speak. Yeah, a web, so to speak, of these things that'll all connect together. Which, by the way, somebody brought up in the chat room since we were talking about video games and tragedies.
Yeah.
Because they brought up JFK that there was actually, I find this so bizarre and did not know about it until it was just mentioned to me and somebody sent me a link here. They did a Columbine Massacre role-playing game. Where literally, like, you have to be, you know, one of the two shooters.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know what to say. But I was not aware of that until just now. And it's got,
yeah, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's definitely creepy. I mean, he put in the IMDb entry for it, and it's, what is it, Columbine, yeah, Super Columbine Massacre RPG.
Yikes. Well, somebody, honestly, at this point, I'll tell you a story about the shooters. I found something out about one of these shooters.
Okay. We'll close out on a mass shooter, but... Like,
somebody needs to write a book, like of the psychological profile of these people or something.
Yes.
That at this point, this has been going on now, it seems like 20 years. Well, I don't know, whenever Columbine happened.
Well,
ever since then.
Yeah, Columbine's 99, so you're talking 23
99,
years.
99, yeah. Yeah, so somebody needs to sit down and do that. And I mean, there's been enough of these people. And it may, you know, maybe worth doing a show talking about one or two of them, but I'm going to talk about one of them.
Okay.
So I was in a casino a couple weeks ago and in North Carolina, and I was at a bar, and these two people sat down next to me, and I ended up drinking with them. Wasn't my plan when I sat down at this bar to drink for very long, but that's what happened. But they were, told me that they were ex-police officers in New York, and they moved to Las Vegas after they retired and worked as security for some musicians.
Okay.
That had a regular show there and lived there and claimed that, and I believe what they were saying, that they, you know, because they lived there, they knew all these people and they were just started talking all, telling these stories,
right,
about how there's lots of crime and things that happen in the casinos. They don't want to get into the media, because they don't want to scare off the tourists. And then they told me that that guy that shot all those people out of that casino 2 or 3 years ago in Mandalay Bay, right. He killed like 50 people or something. They said that the police figured out that his motive was that he had lost his money gambling, and he was doing that. You know, he'd been living in these casinos and getting all these free comps, but now they're going to shut him off, and he did that to get back at him.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, true or not, I mean, it sounds actually quite believable.
Well, you
because
get,
from
yeah.
the details of it, I was reading him at the time, some of the different things he said and did. He sued. He was in a lawsuit and said all kinds of weird things in it.
Right.
So I can believe it. But that's the kind of I mean, there's a similarity though between that and these other people, right. You know, 'cause zero empathy for the people that they're killing, you know.
Right.
But
no, it's a deep, dark topic. And yeah, I'd interview an author who wrote a book on it for sure, to get, you know, to try and get inside the mind of the mass shooter, so to speak. Got to tell you though, that living near Atlantic City and having friends, working there and stuff, there's always this factor of somebody snaps because they lost, you know, everything just now in the casino. And, there's literally a parking garage. I'm not going to tell you where it is. But for years, about once a week, somebody would jump off at the top of his parking garage to their death. You know, and it was like clockwork. Like, you knew it was coming. Mm. After a certain amount of time, it was like, all right, it's been this many days since somebody jumped, and somebody will jump. And, yeah, that's not exactly something the Atlantic City, you know, Chamber of Commerce or Tourist Board wants you to know. But it happens, like, every week. Where there's at least one jumper off of this one parking garage structure. You know, I literally knew a guy that would say, yeah, I take my lunch there every day because that's about when it happens. And I'm like, wow. You know, yeah, again, you don't read about it in the paper. I mean, some of them make the paper, but, you know, they show you two a year or something, and it seems to be happening every week. There's always somebody that snaps over stuff like that, but. The mass shooters in the schools and everything would have to be a whole other kettle of worms, so to speak, right? Kettle of fish, pile of worms, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's outrageous.
Yeah, on the other hand, I don't want to delve into that topic. You don't want to spend my time trying to figure that out. You know, it's just depressing, you know?
Yeah, well, what goes into the mind of somebody who decides that, you know, 20 people, 30 people got to die now?
Yeah.
You know, again, when you got the mass shooter there in Vegas, and if that's the case, that he just lost his money and said, well, since you guys don't want to give me free rooms anymore, I'm going to pay you back. That sounds fairly, I don't want to say reasonable, but that sounds like an explanation, you know. Not a justification,
yeah.
But an explanation, at least for the strangeness that we saw there. But, man, I don't know what gets
in. Of course, they're
the
probably mind. Just guessing, you know, but yeah. This probably makes a lot of sense, that's all.
Well, and it could be that that happened, but it's not really the thing that motivated the guy, too. I mean, that's another possibility. So who knows, Mike? Really? Honestly? Who actually knows, right? Anyway, so look, I know I kept you over the hour, but give you a chance to say anything you want on your way out here, unless you want to stick around more, but I wouldn't if I was you. I'd get away.
Oh, it's been good talking with you and everyone else. And I won't be here next week, but I'll be here the week after. So.
Well, look, it's always great when you're here. You know, sometimes I know you take a week off, whatever, but man, it is so good to have you here consistently. And once again, Larry Hancock should return in a couple of weeks, but you know, we'll see. We definitely don't want to push him or anything. Would rather he takes care of his health before he comes back on here to talk about stuff. But things that are in the news do have Larry's interest. I know that. So we may be talking about some contemporary topics soon. And there may be some historical stuff to go over as well. But I usually get to do that with Mike as well, although we didn't go into much history tonight, unless you want to consider the history of the chat boards and bulletin boards and USNet. That's kind of a piece of history, Mike, isn't it?
It is now.
Anyway, WallStreetWindow.com, be in the know. Go there. It's about a lot more than Wall Street. And, yes, indeed, I recommend... at least three of Mike's books that I've read. I don't know the financial books. I'm not a finance guy, which is why I always need to talk to Mike Swanson and get a handle on what's going on in Money News.